Losing weight is simple, in theory. Burn more calories than you consume. The reality of weight loss is far more complicated. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today we're going to explore the science of weight loss. We'll find out why it's so difficult for some people to lose weight, while others seem to be able to eat whatever they want and never gain an ounce. We'll talk about diet, exercise. We'll find out what brain chemistry has to do with losing weight. We'll also hear the stories of three people who have achieved significant weight loss and find out why keeping the weight off can be as hard as losing it in the first place. Join our conversation after the news. This is an archive edition of Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. We all know that our nation is in the midst of an obesity epidemic, and information about losing weight is everywhere. Every day, we're bombarded with ads for dietary supplements and workout programs. Today, we're going to try to cut through the noise and a lot of misinformation and explore the science of weight loss. We'll find out why it's so difficult for some people to lose weight. We'll talk about diet, exercise, and brain chemistry. And we'll find out why keeping the weight off can be as hard as losing it in the first place. In a moment, I'll be joined by two physicians who specialize in the study of obesity and weight management and a nutritionist. But first, Dan Butterfield of Cedar Rapids has been on an incredible weight loss journey. After the death of his grandmother, he suffered from extreme depression and his weight spiraled out of control. At one point, he weighed 517 pounds. He has now lost 215 pounds. I asked Dan what made him decide it was time to do something about his weight.
Well, actually, for me, it was a couple friends. They didn't actually even know each other, and they contacted me within the same 24-hour period of time asking me to please do something. Anything, whatever I chose, but to do something before it got any more out of hand.
When that happened, how did you approach it? How did you decide you were going to try to lose weight?
Well, I looked into a couple different things and thought something more nutrition-based would be the way to go, which is what I chose. And for myself at that weight, I wasn't able to exercise. So I just focused on eating a well-balanced diet. I added in supplements and shakes and just started getting healthy.
How fast did the weight come off?
Just to kind of give you some dates, I started November 17th, 2009, and I lost 39 pounds in 5 weeks and a day, and I hit 100 pounds off in 6 months. And 200 pounds off in 12 months and 28 days.
Wow.
And then the rest has been since then, and I've actually hit 230 pounds. I've lost more since you've heard about that.
Oh, that's terrific. Congratulations.
Thank you.
So do you exercise now? Is that part of your routine?
At this point, I still haven't. I absolutely could, though. Seriously, I went from working at home to switching over to now I actually coach people to do the exact same thing that I've done. And we actually have a nutrition club in Cedar Rapids, and now I work like 12 hours a day coaching other people to do the same thing that I did. So,
what are your future goals?
I would love to start an exercise program at some point before long. But long term, I just want to help as many people turn their life around as I can.
How do you keep the weight off at this point? What do you have to do?
I just basically maintain by doing the exact same thing I did to lose it as far as focus on good, healthy, balanced nutrition. If people are nutritionally sound, they don't crave things. And craving things is predominantly what makes people gain weight. You know, you don't eat Snickers because you crave celery. You know, you eat Snickers because you crave Snickers. And so just by making sure that you're eating well-balanced, it curbs the cravings. So then you're not eating your arm off every time the meal rolls around.
Has it been frustrating that the weight loss has slowed down?
Not really. The closer and closer I get to my goal, the more I know that it's going to. You know, because I'm more active and because I'm more away from home and stuff, you know, that factors in a lot too. Is just my schedule is making it harder to follow a good, strict program. So,
When you think about yourself when you started this journey, when you were really at rock bottom, and you think about yourself now, how have you changed?
I'm a whole lot happier. You know, when I started, I was also on 4 prescription drugs for depression and depression-related issues. You know, before I kind of hid in my house and talked to people on the phone as I had to, and now I'm out in the public every day talking to people, and just a better person all around, I think.
Dan, thank you.
You're very welcome.
Dan Butterfield is the owner of Healthy Happenings in Cedar Rapids. Again, he's lost 230 pounds. And this hour, we're talking about the science of weight loss. With me now is Dr. Alan Mark. He is co-director of the Obesity Initiative at the University of Iowa. Hello, Dr. Mark.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for being here. Dr. William Haynes is professor of internal medicine and director of the Weight Management Clinic at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics. Hello, Dr. Haynes.
Hi.
And also joining us is Lorraine Lanningham Foster. She's assistant professor of food science and human nutrition at Iowa State University. Hello, Lorraine.
Hi. Thanks for asking me to join the program.
Well, thanks a lot for being here today. And, you know, the idea of losing weight really is deceptively simple. You need to burn more calories than you consume. It's true, but it doesn't seem to work the same for everybody who tries to do it. Dr. Mark, what are some of the things about different people that make that process so different?
Well, Dan's story is truly remarkable and inspirational, but it's not necessarily uniform for all individuals. And there are several factors. Through evolution, the body was equipped to defend against weight loss and starvation. It was not equipped to defend against weight gain. And there are some individuals who are genetically more prone to weight gain in our environment with the unhealthy foods that Dan was describing. So one feature that's different in individuals is their genetic predisposition or resistance to weight gain. In addition, when individuals lose weight through various diets, there are hormonal adjustments in the body that increase appetite and decrease metabolism and make it difficult to maintain the weight loss. May not be as difficult to lose the weight, but more difficult to maintain the weight loss. And that is one of the greatest challenges, and that's why Dan deserves to be complimented so much in
Absolutely.
His success.
Well, there have been studies done that have shown even young, healthy people in an environment where they're being fed a high-calorie diet and their movements are being restricted. There have been studies that have shown that in a given period of time with a high-calorie diet, one person will gain 10 pounds and another person will gain 30 pounds. So the variation between different people seems to be extreme in some cases.
It is. There can be a tenfold variation in the weight gain over several months with a controlled dietary intake. So if you overfeed a group of individuals by 1,000 kilocalories a day for 8 weeks, there can be a tenfold variability in the weight gain. So it is a very real phenomenon.
Dr. Haynes, when somebody comes to you to lose weight, is there a way to calculate how much their body will actually burn calorie-wise and how they'll react as an individual to trying weight loss techniques?
There are a few ways you can do that. One is there are equations that are based on a person's weight, their age, their gender, that can give an estimate of how many calories they burn and then how many they should eat to lose weight. But obviously those are not personalized. We use a machine called a calorimeter that can actually measure the resting metabolic rate, and that gives a better estimate. But in truth, probably the best way of doing it is to give people a controlled calorie diet, have them monitor how many calories they're eating, and then see what weight loss they achieve on that diet. And I'm always surprised. Sometimes people will come back and they'll have lost 1 pound a month, and so other people on with the same calorie deficit I'm recommending will come back with 10 pounds in a month. And then we adjust the our recommendation for the calorie target based on that.
Well, and Dr. Mark was talking about genetic predisposition to obesity. Is there any way that you can know if someone carries genes that predispose them to hanging on to this weight?
In general, when the patients come to a clinic for weight loss, most of them have fairly severe obesity. And my presumption is that most of them carry, at least one or probably several genes that are making them predisposed to weight gain. I think, it's rare to find the patient who easily loses weight, by the time they reach the hospital clinic for weight loss. But there are, there are a few people who are either have very high calorie intakes or are eating a lot of hidden calories, things like, sugary sodas, sweets, alcohol. And suddenly they'll stop, for example, drinking a sugary soda, and they'll be losing 2 pounds a week just from doing that. But that's usually the exception.
Lorraine, earlier we were hearing Dan Butterfield's story. He was talking about using a lot of shakes and nutritional supplements. And, of course, there are so many different diets out there and books about diets and all kinds of different recommendations. If you are consuming fewer calories, or if you're consuming, right, if you're burning more calories than you're consuming, does it matter what you're eating?
There have been some studies to look at whether certain diets that are either low carbohydrate and high fat or high protein, whether these sorts of diets are more beneficial in terms of weight loss. But overwhelmingly, a lot of the research has shown that there's a lot of variability in how people respond to these diets, first of all, in terms of other health parameters like their blood lipids and such. But overall, it seems like through several studies that it does come down to calories. So if you eat fewer calories, you burn more calories, then the likelihood is that you are going to reduce your weight.
Now, of course, people do recommend eating healthy foods, eating natural foods. What kind of difference might that make?
Making sure that you're eating healthy foods and, as Dan said, sort of a well-balanced, healthy diet, it's going to mean that your body is getting all of the nutrients that it needs. There are so many essential things that we need from fat. So, we do need to eat fat. Sometimes there's that misconception that fat is bad, but we do need to eat fat. There are a variety of different things that we need in terms of essential amino acids from protein. So, our body really does need a well-balanced set of nutrients to be healthy, to meet all the requirements. And so I think, Dan's point of eating healthier is a really good one. In terms of some people's cravings being reduced when they eat a healthier diet, I think that, is also probably variable from person to person.
All right, and we will talk more about that in a moment. We're talking today about the science of weight loss. With me, Lorraine Lanningham Foster, Assistant Professor of Food Science and Human Nutrition at Iowa State University. Dr. William Haynes, Professor of Internal Medicine and Director of the Weight Management Clinic at UIHC. And Alan Mark, Dr. Alan Mark, Co-Director of the Obesity Initiative at the University of Iowa. I'm Charity Nebbe, and you're listening to an archive edition of Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Today, we're talking about the science of weight loss. And as we continue our conversation, right now we're going to hear from another person who's been on a remarkable weight loss journey. His name is Joe Knorr. He's a teacher in the Iowa City Community School District. And about 6 years ago, he decided that he needed to lose weight. He lost over 80 pounds and has maintained that weight loss. I asked him how he lost those 80-some pounds.
I really don't attribute it to one source. I did join Weight Watchers, and that gave me some tools to learn what to do and how to do it. But, I read lots of books.
Can you describe your diet before and after?
Oh, yeah. Before, I would eat things and I would eat mindlessly. And I wouldn't think about what I was eating, and I would overeat quite frequently. And then later on, I used those tools, and I found a different way to eat.
How did you do that? Because that's a very difficult thing for a lot of people to change. Those processed foods taste really good. Mm. How did you make the change? Was there something in your mind that allowed you to do it?
Well, you know, I think the biggest thing was that you have to really want to do it yourself. If you don't want to do it, that's why I say that no one program or anything can change you. You have to really want to do it, and you have to make it a lifestyle, and you have to see that it's every day. And I watched other people around me, like people that I worked with that were thinner, and I saw them turning things down or maybe just tasting a little bit of it and saying, oh, that's not what I want to put in my mouth. And I changed my thinking, my lifestyle, probably the most.
Being in a school, though, you're surrounded by goodies. Kids are always bringing in cupcakes or cookies for their birthday. In the teacher's lounge, people are always bringing in treats. Was that a struggle for you to be surrounded by these things and not allow yourself to eat them?
You know, one thing that I did for myself was I just said that if I was going to have a treat or a snack, I had to bring the thing from home. I didn't eat anything that wasn't brought from home for myself.
Do you still do that?
Uh-huh. Still to this day. I've been working at it for a long time now, and I still do that. I keep rules like that.
How long did it take you to lose that weight?
I would say about 7 years. You know, and, you know, like that was from the time I first started, you know, and it comes off slow. But then after you lose weight, the biggest thing was maintaining that so that you don't go overboard and lose too much and that you don't put it back on. So that finding that that way to maintain it and kind of watch it without being too watchful.
How have you found that balance?
One thing that I did to find that balance was kind of keep it in the front of my mind, not in the back of my mind, but kind of keep it, you know, always on the playing field and remember what's good for me. What do I want out of life? How I can do this.
Joe Knorr, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Joe Knorr is a teacher in the Iowa City Community School District, and later on we'll hear the story of someone else who has been on a remarkable weight loss journey. We'll continue our conversation now with our guest today. Dr. Alan Mark is here. He's co-director of the Obesity Initiative at the University of Iowa. Dr. William Haynes is a professor of internal medicine and director of the Weight Management Clinic at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics. And Lorraine Lanningham Foster is an assistant professor of food science and human nutrition at Iowa State University. And Dr. Haynes, listening to Joe talk there, he made it sound like it's in some ways for him a matter of mind over matter. He said, you need to want it enough. Well, a lot of people want it enough and can't quite make it happen. When you see people who are successful at losing weight, what do you think does set them apart?
I think it's a combination of things. I think when we've listened to these two stories, we realize that they both have made a commitment that they think about every day in terms of losing weight. They're thinking about what they're eating, about how many calories are in it. They're thinking about how they handle difficult situations like the snacks, bringing into school, about going out to restaurants, for example. And I think the other thing is that they've probably realized that they've had some risks from weight loss. And I think that's a motivating factor in many people. There are a lot of medical conditions that are worsened by weight loss. Obviously, we think about cholesterol and blood pressure. But conditions like depression, anxiety, insomnia, chronic pain, liver disease, fatty liver, for example, is probably if present in 50% of middle-aged adults, and in many of them will cause hepatitis, sleep apnea. And I think sometimes people have to focus on the risks they're facing from their weight before they're willing to make that kind of commitment to change. And in many patients, it's very difficult, and they need other steps as well.
Well, I think a lot of us, in thinking about a diet, you think about dieting for a specific period of time, and then when you hit that weight, you're done. But it sounds like if you're losing an amount of weight as significant as 80 pounds or 230 pounds, it is not something where you diet and you quit. You have to continue pretty much forever.
Absolutely. And in fact, when you look at the trajectory of weight over a person's lifetime, most people gain about 10 pounds every 10 years. And so there's almost an inexorable tendency to gain weight. And if you want to avoid that, or if you want to maintain weight loss, you're going to have to do what these guests or these people have talked about, monitoring the calories, thinking about what they're eating, and perhaps going to exercise regularly. That would be the one factor I would emphasize is regular exercise, particularly for weight maintenance.
And I want to talk more about exercise in a moment. Let's stick with the idea of the long-term diet change. And Lorraine, I know that you're teaching a class on obesity right now, and I also know that you have studied human nutrition. When you look at the necessary changes that people need to make long-term to keep weight off, what are some of the things that maybe surprise your students the most about that?
I think we actually evaluated right away at the beginning of the class a popular article that was in the New York Times recently, The Fat Trap.
And we have that posted on our Facebook page right now.
Right.
If you're interested in looking at it.
Right. I think my students were just really overwhelmed by this idea that you would put so much work into the weight loss, but once the weight came off, the work really wasn't over. And that there was still going to be a lot of attention needed to the amount of calories that were coming in and the amount of calories that people were burning through exercise. And so I think it was a real eye-opener to my students, who many of them aren't really struggling with weight at this point. They're young college students. I think a lot of them were sort of surprised and shocked. But most of my students are potentially going to be working with people in the health profession in the coming years, and so it's good for them to understand the realities of weight loss and the struggles that people go through with obesity.
Well, and one of the things pointed out in that article is that after someone loses weight, in some cases and in many cases, the person who has lost weight has to burn more calories or consume fewer calories to maintain that weight loss than someone of the same size, the same build, someone who hasn't had to lose weight. So a person who has lost weight has to work harder to maintain their weight than someone who hasn't.
Right. And I think that goes back to Dr. Mark's comments earlier about, there are a variety of genes and hormones that come into play that we're starting to realize that even post-weight loss, the response of the body in terms of these hormones, it really is quite different between individuals. And so that's where we do see the variability, not only in someone's gaining of weight, but once they lose weight, maintaining that weight loss. And we've learned a lot from the National Weight Control Registry about sort of the characteristics of people who have successfully lost weight. And they do have to exercise probably in that 60 to 90 minute range most days of the week. And that seems overwhelming, but most of the people who are successful at this make it part of their lifestyle, just like Joe was mentioning a few moments ago as well.
And Joe's talking about never eating something that he doesn't provide himself. I mean, I think that really symbolizes the incredible commitment that people need to make in some cases to keep that weight off. And Dr. Mark, we're going to continue talking more about exercise, and in the next segment of the program, we're going to focus more on exercise. But as people exercise in conjunction with a diet to lose weight, how does that change their bodies?
So maintenance of weight loss is much more difficult, sadly, than losing weight even. And Dan's story and Joe's stories are remarkable, but the evidence is that 80 to 90% of individuals who lose substantial amount of weight regain it in 3 to 5 years. And one of the reasons they regain it, as we've been talking, is because with the biologic adjustments to weight loss, there is a decrease in metabolism. So the individual has to decrease their caloric intake even further to maintain the weight loss, or alternatively, they have to exercise. Exercise minimizes the decrease in metabolism that occurs with weight loss. So that's why, although exercise is not terribly important in losing weight, it is critically important in the maintenance of weight loss.
Dr. Haynes?
One of the things I ask my patients is how many hours a day they spend sitting. And there's this concept in the obesity field that sitting time is proportionate to regaining weight. And there's a move towards, for example, having people stand while they're walking, while they're working. And the other reason I ask people about sitting is that often they're watching television. And I say, well, if you're going to spend 2 hours a night watching television, why aren't you exercising? Because, you know, maybe not for the whole 2 hours, but that is time that's available for doing exercise. But I think trying to avoid sedentary, sitting and is in front of the TV or the computer is a really critical way of preventing weight regain.
Does it make a difference when the weight loss is going on? Does it change how your metabolism changes if you are exercising while on a low-calorie diet, or can the exercise come later?
I wouldn't be too prescriptive about that. I think one of the things is that many patients who have a weight problem find it very difficult to exercise. And in our program, I routinely refer people to our physical therapy department, where we have an excellent physical therapist who works with patients and identifies the barriers to exercise. And often, you know, I'll tell people, if you can only walk for 5 minutes, then walk for 5 minutes 4 or 5 times a day to start with. And then gradually they can expand that. But, you know, when you weigh 500 pounds or even 300 pounds, often you have severe, arthritis pain or plantar fasciitis or back pain or even just shortness of breath that make it difficult to start on an exercise program. And it can even be people can be scared of exercising because of that.
And Lorraine, I know you have to leave us in just a few minutes. We were talking earlier about all of those different diets that are out there. And, you know, sometimes you see a lot of people participating in weight loss programs through using shakes and foods that they wouldn't normally include in their diet. For long-term success, is there a difference between overall success rates with how you lost the weight diet-wise?
Actually, when you look at the way that people lose weight, there is evidence that maybe some very low-calorie diets, people will lose their weight more rapidly. But then the true test is when you look at them, a year or maybe even 3 to 5 years later, and in terms of the long-term outlook on these different types of diets, they're all pretty similar in that, unfortunately, as Dr. Mark said, 80 to 90% of people will regain the weight. So although there might be some variability in how quickly the weight comes off with the different diets, inevitably long-term, they're pretty similar results.
Okay, so in the end, it doesn't necessarily make a difference, but and maybe Dr. Haynes, you can speak to this, is it difficult sometimes for people who lose weight with foods that they wouldn't normally eat, like shakes? Is it difficult sometimes to transition into a maintenance diet that they can live with?
I think that's a very important factor. And one of the things I try and teach people is to learn how to monitor their calorie intake, no matter what they're eating. And I think there's some new technologies now in software and in mobile technology that really can help people. There's applications for smartphones that will – you just put in what you've eaten. It will tell you your calories. It will keep track of that day by day, even give you a weekly summary. And I think some of those tools are very useful. And I think technology has the potential to really help people with weight loss and especially weight maintenance. For example, sending reminders to people via cell phone about checking their calories or about getting up and walking. There's some products on the market that can track your physical activity over a period of weeks and automatically download that to a website, for example. So I think those are approaches that will help people maintain weight loss.
And do you see that as a very important part of weight loss, keeping track of things, either keeping a food diary, an exercise log, making sure that you're writing it down and keeping yourself accountable?
In that weight registry that we mentioned before, and in the studies that have been done, that is one of the most important factors, is keeping a journal, keeping a record of it. But interestingly, many people don't like doing it. It only takes 3 to 5 minutes a day, but we're doing some studies now, and that's one of the most common questions that I have, is after about 6 months, people say, do I still have to do this food diary? And it's sometimes intimidating to them when I say, I'd like you to do it for the rest of your life.
I can see that being, yeah. being yeah. an intimidating yeah. factor.
But I view it as a diary, and it's something you should think about for the rest of your life.
I want to talk more about brain chemistry and also medical approaches to weight loss, and we're going to talk a great deal more about exercise as well. And Lorraine, as I said, I know that you need to get going. So when your students leave your program about obesity, is there one thing in particular that you want them to take away with them?
I do. I think, and it's really the common theme that it's not easy, that it's an everyday struggle. So if they're going to be working with patients, they need to realize the struggles that their patients and clients are going through. And so it's not easy. It's very complicated. There are many pathways in our bodies that are controlling and defending our body weight, because through the years, we've not always lived in such times of plenty. And so our bodies are programmed more for those times. And so I just want my students to realize that it's an everyday struggle for people, especially when if they've lost the weight, and many people are going through weight loss as well. So I hope that they'll get some empathy for them through my class. So
Lorraine, thank you very much
for
being with us today. Lorraine Lamingham Foster is an assistant professor of food science and human nutrition at Iowa State University. Staying with me, Dr. William Haynes, professor of internal medicine and director of the Weight Management Clinic at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics, and Dr. Alan Mark, co-director of the Obesity Initiative at the University of Iowa. We'll continue this conversation in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa. You're listening to an archive edition of Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today, we're talking about the science of weight loss. In a moment, we'll continue our conversation about the science of weight loss with our two physicians who have dedicated their research to obesity and weight management. Also, we're going to talk more about exercise in a moment. But first, Joanne Meth lives in Burlington, and she has also been on a remarkable weight loss journey. Between 2003 and 2007, she lost 89 pounds, and she has been keeping it off. She struggled with her weight for most of her life. She'd lost weight before and regained it. I asked her what made her decide it was time to lose the weight and keep it off.
I think I just didn't feel good. I didn't have energy. And I just think it was the time when I decided that I needed to do it. And I got to walking. And the more I walked, the easier the weight came off. And I started watching my portion controls and counting calories and doing journaling. And so it's a never-ending battle, but it's one you have to do for life.
During this weight loss journey, did you meet with other people who were losing weight at the same time?
Yes, we have three different chapters in the Burlington area, and we have a meeting and a weigh-in.
How do you think that helps you to meet with people every week and talk with them?
It helps a lot, and you have to be accountable when you step on that scales every Tuesday night. I have one lady in my group that has kept her weight off for 36 years.
Well, you mentioned it's a never-ending battle, and I know that you had lost weight in the past and not been able to keep it off. What have you done this time? How do you have to keep working to maintain that weight loss?
I now have a beautiful wardrobe, so I don't want to have to buy new clothes again, because I have so many nice ones now, and I've got so much more energy. I'm finally very outgoing, which I've always been a very quiet person. I can speak in public without any problem. I feel better.
So you've found motivation to keep you going.
Yeah.
Do you get frustrated sometimes because the temptations are still there?
Oh, yeah. If if we have the wrong thing around here, it's hard for me to stay out of. But I maybe go get a drink of water or go get busy and do something else.
Well, you mentioned you had a friend who's been going to these meetings who has kept her weight off for 36 years, which, you know, I think a lot of people think once I lose the weight, I'm done. I don't have to do anything else. Oh. Did it take a while for you to accept that it doesn't end with that?
Yeah, because I was my highest. I was over 300 pounds in 2003. And once I reached my goal and found the difference in how I felt, I just changed my way of eating. And my husband's been very supportive. He eats almost anything healthy I fix. My dear little mother is 96, and she's even been my biggest supporter. She's always telling me how proud she is of me that I've lost my weight and kept it off. My brothers say I'm no longer their big sister. I'm their older sister.
Oh, well, Joanne, thank you so much for telling us your story today.
You're welcome.
And congratulations to you.
Thank you.
Joanne Meth lives in Burlington, and she lost 89 pounds. She's been keeping it off now for several years. And with me in the studio today, Dr. Alan Mark, co-director of the Obesity Initiative at the University of Iowa, and Dr. William Haynes, a professor of internal medicine and director of the Weight Management Clinic at UIHC. And Dr. Mark, we've been talking about these stories today, significant amounts of weight loss. Two of the people I talked to lost over 80 pounds. One of the people 230 pounds. So we've been talking about big numbers here, and I know that can be overwhelming to some people who have weight that they really need to lose. How much weight loss makes a difference health-wise?
Well, these are truly remarkable stories and inspirational stories. There is also evidence that even modest weight loss can have beneficial effects, even in individuals who are quite obese. Anti-diabetic effects, decreasing the development and incidence of diabetes. So when someone has difficulty losing large amounts of weight or difficulty keeping it off, they shouldn't get down on themselves. This is not a personal failing. There are biologic factors that are contributing to it. This is not simply a lack of willpower or discipline. And the support groups are very, very important. And there are new programs with support groups provided by email, by phone, by websites. So the stories that we've heard today all substantially involve support groups, and they're really inspirational.
I've also heard that you mentioned some of the online things, and of course a lot of people are involved in social networks. I've heard that if people are open about their goals and post things about their process when they're losing weight or doing an exercise program, that just making it public can make a difference.
Yeah, and there's some very interesting initiatives with some of the social networks. I saw one idea which would be to deprive people of Facebook access. They wouldn't be able to post or read Facebook if they didn't check in their calories every day, for example. So I think maybe for younger people that might be one thing that works. So I think there's some innovative things that we can achieve with technology and some of these networks.
Interesting. Well, I want to bring someone else into the conversation now. Amy Fletcher is a lecturer in the Department of Health and Human Physiology at the University of Iowa. Hello, Amy.
Hello.
Thank you for being here today. And we've been talking about exercise. We haven't really focused on it yet, but exercise obviously is a very important component of most weight loss.
It is. And we find that although people don't have to exercise to lose weight, we can do that through dietary modifications that people who are able to maintain the weight loss have incorporated physical activity into their routines. And never forget the value of doing physical activity in and of itself, whether or not we're losing weight or not. So people who may not be losing weight can still get a lot of benefits from incorporating more activity into their life.
How do you define exercise? Because, of course, there is, we were talking earlier about people standing up while they're working or being more active around the house. What's the difference between activity and exercise?
Sure. Well, You know, it's funny because I teach this to my students, but physical activity is an inclusive term that incorporates all different types of movement. Exercise is really the type of movement that we do when we're trying to get fit. So if I'm trying to increase my muscle strength, then I do exercises that are going to overload my muscles. If I'm trying to exercise to increase my cardiovascular or cardiorespiratory fitness, then I do activities that are going to challenge that body system. For most of us, we're not physically active enough in a variety of ways. So we don't do enough daily activity, nor do we do exercise. So when we're thinking about incorporating more activity, especially for those folks who are interested in maintaining weight loss or adding to the weight loss that they're trying to achieve, we encourage people to do as much activity as they can throughout the day. And that might include walking to work, which may or may not be intense enough, as well as going to a gym to where we might be getting that more exercise that challenges some aspect of our fitness.
We've been talking this hour a lot about how some people reach a point where they just can't take off the weight. They can be trying to control their diets, they can be exercising, but weight loss is elusive for them for whatever reason. How much of a difference does it make to your body if you are exercising regularly, even if you're still carrying all of this additional weight?
Exercise is crucial to our body, to good health. If you don't use it, you lose it. And we know so much about the benefits of physical activity, regardless of weight loss, that sometimes I get worried that the benefits are lost because we do focus so much on the weight outcomes that we don't hear the healthy messages of the benefits of doing more exercise, what those can have for us. When we look at the numbers, when we are going for a walk, sometimes it's impressive, sometimes it's not so impressive. So the benefits of exercise, I don't think we fully understand them, but it's not just in the amount of calories that you expend. If I'm going to walk for 45 minutes, if I were to sit on the couch, I'd still expend some energy. Certainly my rate at which I expend energy is much higher when I go out for the walk, but I'm only going to expend probably 300 calories doing that walk. And so the difference, that's where I think some people get caught up, is they see the number when they walk on the treadmill of this is how many calories I've expended, but we forget that if we would have just sat there, we would have expended some energy as well. So it gets a little bit complicated.
Can you be physically fit and be obese?
Absolutely. So physical fitness is a measure of how you can achieve on certain fitness tests. So if I can do 20 push-ups, I have pretty good muscular endurance, and that means I'm pushing my own body size. If I can go out and run a mile, I've got pretty good cardiovascular fitness. And so those are achievements that anybody can have regardless of our body size. Now, for folks who are carrying around more weight, it's a little bit harder. It's harder because you are carrying around some extra weight that's not all muscle. It's not all contributing to the exercise that you do, but it's certainly possible to be fit and over fat.
And a lot of people, when they start a new exercise program along with a diet, they will go through a period where they are working as hard as they can, they are controlling their diet, and they actually are putting on pounds. Do you have a recommend, and of course that's as the body is converting fat to muscle and you're putting on muscle, which weighs more than fat. Do you have a recommendation for people for staying motivated through that period?
Yeah, and when that happens, it's usually because we're weighing ourselves maybe a little bit too often. We're weighing ourselves at different times of the day, and certainly hydration levels change throughout the day. Hydration levels change when you exercise. And so we also sometimes see that number on the calories expended, and we may not think about it, but we kind of think that that gives us some extra leeway. But so when we're thinking about it, just take it as a grain of salt. And it takes a while for muscle to build, but certainly as we are becoming more active, we need fluid in our body, and we might retain a little bit of water, and that would be a good thing. And if we do so, we might gain a couple of pounds in the process. But that's not a bad thing. It's not because we're not doing what we're supposed to be doing. So we just have to kind of, again, take it with a grain of salt.
Dr. Haynes?
One of the things that many people, even if they've not lost a lot of weight with exercise or maybe even gained that pound or two, if they measure their waist, they may well see that they've lost a couple inches around the waist because they're reducing the so-called visceral fat, the waist fat, and maybe increasing the muscle somewhere else. And so that's another way of motivating themselves is to measure your waist and maybe measure the neck as well. That's another area where bad fat accumulates.
All right. So a different way to gauge your progress.
Absolutely.
Before we run out of time, I want to ask you about some medical approaches to weight loss. And I don't want to spend a lot of time on the medical surgeries today. That's, I think, a bigger discussion for another time. But are there drugs that can really help people lose weight? I mean, certainly we hear about things and then we hear about things getting taken off the market. But are there drugs that can help people?
You know, I view weight loss and weight loss medicines as a bit like we were thinking about cholesterol and blood pressure 30, 40, 50 years ago. If you had high blood pressure in the 50s or 60s, you would spend a lot of time on your diet and exercise and carefully watching your salt. And now we don't have to do that as aggressively because we've got very good medications. And we're just at the, I think, at the cusp of getting very, good medications for weight loss. There are some that are on the market. There's a fat blocker available. There's medications that are used for migraine. There's certain hormone treatments for diabetes, all of which can help with weight loss. And we're testing some of those in research protocols at the university. But I think the critical thing, as you say, is safety and is knowing that the drugs we use are safe because there have been previous drugs withdrawn. The ones that have been withdrawn generally were appetite suppressants that actually increased blood pressure and probably caused heart problems because of that. And so the FDA is being appropriately cautious in evaluating new drugs. The ones I talked about, such as the fat blockers or the diabetes hormones, don't increase blood pressure. And so we have reasonable confidence that they would be safe. And I think there's certainly a role for drug therapy in helping people lose weight, either because they have significant complications of obesity or because they're just very, very heavy to start with.
And with the drugs that you're looking at right now, how effective are they in your preliminary research, I guess?
We are seeing about 15% weight loss over a six-month period, and we're going out to we're actually extending a study to a year to see if that can be maintained for a year, which is a fairly long period in medical research terms, though, and in terms of some of the stories we've heard is not that long. But I think, even 5% weight loss can have substantial effects, as Dr. Mark mentioned. 15% should give people significant health benefits, but also provide that emotional feedback for them that, often when you get the weight loss of that magnitude, you're then more motivated to continue with monitoring the calories and perhaps more able to exercise.
And Dr. Mark, we've spent this entire hour talking about how difficult it can be to lose weight, how very difficult it can be to keep the weight off once it's lost. And of course, there are many, particularly children out there, who are at risk of becoming obese. Prevention is a very important part of this puzzle.
The fact that once you become obese, it becomes more difficult to lose weight and to maintain the weight loss emphasizes the importance of the prevention of obesity, and the prevention of obesity starts with children. That's why Michelle Obama's program and other initiatives in the state of Iowa are so very important, and that is really another program.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, we have just a moment left, and Dr. Mark, I'll let you have the last word today. For people who have gone through weight loss and have struggled to keep the weight off, is there one important thing that you'd like them to understand about our bodies that may help them maintain some motivation?
I would think that they should understand that this is a battle against biology. They should not get down on themselves if they fall off their diet, fall off their exercise program. And they might even think about the distinction between activities of daily living and exercise. And Dan's story fits that because although he says he's not exercising, he clearly has increased substantially his activities of daily living, which are critically important.
Dr. Alan Mark, thank you. Dr. Alan Mark is co-director of the Obesity Initiative at the University of Iowa. Dr. William Haynes, thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. William Haynes is director of the Weight Management Clinic at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics. And Amy Fletcher, thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Amy Fletcher is a lecturer in the Department of Health and Human Physiology at the University of Iowa. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese and Catherine Perkins. Our executive producer is Jeff Schmidt. Technical support today from Jason Burns. Podcasting and on-demand audio of Talk of Iowa are available on our website, iowapublicradio.org. I'm Charity Nebbe, and this is an archive edition of Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.